Hello? Hello?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PION AG conference call on the phase III headline data hosted by Dr. Wolfgang Soenken. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to Ralf Penner to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us for PION's call on the U.S. phase III bronchoscopy headline data. My name is Ralf Penner. I'm PION's Vice President, Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Wolfgang Soenken, PION CEO. Within the next half hour, we are going to present and explain the U.S. phase III bronchoscopy headline data. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded, and an audio recording will be available later today and will be posted on our website. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PION's current anticipations. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. Und an dieser Stelle noch ein Hinweis für die deutschen Teilnehmer. Als international operierendes Unternehmen halten wir die Präsentation in englischer Sprache. Wir möchten den deutschen Teilnehmern am Ende jedoch die Möglichkeit geben, ihre Fragen in Deutsch zu stellen, und die werden wir dann auch in Deutsch beantworten. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should now start right on with the presentation. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ralf, and hello to everybody who is signing in. Thank you for your interest in PION. Please take a careful look at the disclaimer, which we can skip. We will discuss briefly, for those who are not familiar with the company, they have been enticed to dial in because of our great news today, a little bit of our corporate background. We're a specialty pharma company based in Germany, public since 2005. Our current cash reach is more than enough to go all the way to the U.S. filing. Our market cap is fluctuating right now, and we'll see where it will settle. Next slide, please. So remimazolam is our lead compound. It is a member of the benzodiazepine family, and its main difference to existing benzodiazepines is that it's not metabolized in the liver, but metabolized by tissue esterases. And this is the result of a clever chemical design, because an ester group is added to a benzo scaffold. When esterases take this ester group away, then you have an inactive compound. So it's the first benzodiazepine without an active metabolite, and therefore it has an ultra short half-life. In addition, it can be reversed with flumazenil if required. This is a major differentiation to propofol, and so far we are very happy with the results. As you see on the bottom, we currently are looking into two different lead indications, which are different in different regions. Procedural sedation is the lead indication in the U.S., and general anesthesia the lead indication in Europe. It has been the lead indication in Japan. Next. I don't want to go into the details of all the clinical trials that we have done. We are, meanwhile, have reached the number 19 internally. So we have more than 1,500 volunteers, patients on drug in the various indications, and two programs now have completed the phase 3 trials, which is the U.S. Procedural sedation and general anesthesia in Japan. Next. So the U.S. study program, which has extensively been discussed with the FDA, and specifically the design with the placebo control, was a request by the FDA, which I yes, sometimes people have difficulty to understand who are not used to this approach. But the request was that it would be helpful to show the differentiation effect of remifentanil towards fentanyl, and that has driven the request of the design by the FDA. So all three trials, we have now headline results at the minimum. The first one was in colonoscopy patients reported last year. The second one was also in colonoscopy patients in very sick patients. And the last one was the study in bronchoscopy, which we are have announced last night. Next. So the summary of the bronchoscopy trial, it was a double-blind, randomized, controlled, multicenter trial comparing remifentanil to placebo. That is the primary and relevant endpoint for the approval. We added an additional open label arm for midazolam because we want to achieve a comparable label. So it's always useful to have additional data in a trial as a reference point. And the procedure this time was not colonoscopy, but patients undergoing diagnostic or therapeutic bronchoscopies. And the primary outcome measure was the same as in all three of these trials, namely, first of all, the completion of the bronchoscopy, second, no requirement for rescue medication, and thirdly, no requirement for more than 5 doses of study medication within a certain period. For remi and placebo, it was 15 minutes, and for midazolam, it was a 12-minute period. The difference of the midazolam period has to do with the fact that midazolam, according to the label, has to be given over 2 minutes, and we want to apply remimazolam within 1 minute, and therefore these times could not be synchronized, and the patients, all patients, would have a chance to receive rescue medication at the same time point. Next. The secondary objectives are a mixture of efficacy and efficiency data, like time to start the procedure, time to fully alert, and then qualitative measures of cognitive functions, like recall of the procedure, and finally, of course, a broad set of safety assessments, and including also PK measurements in patients older than 75 years. Next. So the design of the trial, and this reflects the design of all three trials again, double-blind remimazolam, 5 milligram initial dose followed by 2.5 milligram top-up, double-blind versus placebo, and then open-label midazolam at the dose that's labeled in the U.S., 303 patients on remi, 59 on placebo, and 69 on midazolam. All patients received fentanyl between 25 and 75 microgram before they received the study medication. Next. What I would like to show you first is the demographics of the study in the bronchoscopy trial. And we wanted to compare this specifically with the phase 3 in colonoscopy. And you see one striking point is that there the average age is significantly higher. The second one is that we have more patients in the age group above 65 years. And finally, most importantly, you see that we have a pretty high number of ASA3 patients, which is not a surprise, but may not be obvious for the layperson, because bronchoscopy patients have a significant comorbidity and most screening patients in colonoscopy are essentially healthy patients. Just as a reminder, ASA stands for American Society of Anesthesiologists, and it's an assessment of status of health. And ASA 1-2 means essentially healthy patients, maybe with something like hypertension, but it's well compensated. In ASA 3, you already have some impact on your daily activities and your quality of life by the disease. You have a serious disease, and ASA 4 means that you're always at risk to lose your life because of the disease. Next. So here are the top-line data according to the success criteria. 82% of patients responded to remimazolam. Give me a second. My computer shut down the picture. I'm not in the same room as my colleagues. So the placebo success rate was 3.4%, and the midazolam response rate was about 35%. And most of the patients required rescue medication, but the two other success criteria also had an impact. Next. And here you see the overview and comparison amongst the three trials that we have performed. On the left side, the data in the bronchoscopy trial. In the middle, the results of the ASA 1-2, mostly patients in the pivotal colonoscopy trial. And on the right panel, you see the result of the patients ASA 3-4. And what you see is that the difference of the results of remimazolam is in a very small range between 82 and 91%, whereas the response rate to within the placebo varies from 3 to 0%, and the midazolam from 34 to 12%. So it's a much bigger impact, obviously, in the midazolam group on how much fentanyl, for example, you give as an additional contribution to the sedative effect. Next. The median time to start the procedure in the bronchoscopy trial was 5 minutes for remimazolam, 17 minutes for placebo, and 16 minutes for midazolam. And on the next slide, you will see that how this compares again amongst the three trials. So on the left side, the bronchoscopy results, in the middle, the pivotal phase 3 trial. The difference there is 4 to 19 minutes, essentially, and in the ASA 3 population, it was 5 to 18 and 19 minutes. So again, a result very consistent amongst the three trials, both for remimazolam, the placebo, and the midazolam arm, and this is a very strong indicator that this study was study concept and the overall concept was very well designed and very well followed through in the execution of the trial. Next. The median time to wake up to fully alert in the bronchoscopy trial is 6 minutes to 14 minutes to 12 minutes. Placebo, 14 minutes, a little bit longer. This is probably because these patients receive a higher overall dose of midazolam and also a higher dose of fentanyl. And then if you look at last dose to back to normal, this was reported by the patients. You see that the difference between remi and midazolam is around 70 minutes, which is, you know, a nice hour of gain, but that the placebo patients take a very long time, and this is definitely, in our assessment, due to the higher dose of midazolam that they have received, which is more in reflection of what a normal dose of midazolam would be. Next. So here you see a bigger difference in the wake-up times as compared to the time to start the procedure. So 6 to 14 minutes versus 7 to 21 between the two pivotal studies. In the ASA 3-4 patients, we already have discussed that the differences are smaller because there the dosing of both midazolam and remimazolam and fentanyl was definitely less and more careful because these patients need to be handled very, very carefully. In the two other trials, the doses were given at a higher pace and higher dosage overall. Next. So when we look at the safety profile of the trial, you see that overall adverse event rate is comparable between the three groups. These treatment emergent effects do not necessarily indicate that patients suffered or anything. Most of the side effects are related to hypertension or hypotension, which is due to a very narrow definition of these events. Hypertension and hypertension were defined by a change in 20 millimeters mercury, and this also led to the case that some patients had several of these events. But this is a normal fluctuation in a patient who has done, who is undergoing this type of procedure. Next. So we have been criticized and under fire a lot because initially we had problems in recruiting the patients in the time period that we had hoped we could recruit it. But what you see here is a comparison to the last trial that was randomized trial that was performed in the U.S. fospropofol bronchoscopy phase 3 trial. They had 25 centers, 225 patients, and it took them 14 months duration of recruitment. We had 15 centers, 446 patients, 22 months of recruitment. So a higher rate of patient per center per month. And I have to thank our team who have done a great job in the last year to speed up the recruitment to the level that allows us and puts us in a position to discuss these results today. And on the next slide, we discuss the gain in efficiency here with a focus on the colonoscopy study, where this is very important because colonoscopy is really a high volume procedure in the US. It's 20 million, whereas bronchoscopy and other procedures are, you know, anything between 500 and 1 million and some even less. So this is the one where the highest throughput is needed in order to allow enough screening to prevent colon cancer, and a gain of 20 minutes per procedure on average is a super result, and this will make it a very attractive alternative for colonoscopy. The next slide, the conclusion of the ACA34 and bronchoscopy study, which are essentially safety studies. When we discussed our approach for procedural sedation in the US, we initially went in with a request to get a label for the GI space only, but understandably the FDA reasoned that there may be use in other indications even if it's not in the label, and therefore we had to provide data on a very sick patient population and in another indication outside of the GI space, and bronchoscopy was the one that we had agreed upon. And of course you can imagine if you put a bronchoscope into a patient that this definitely has an impact on the airway, and therefore this was a suitable patient population, but also we had to assume that we would see more side effects because these are more sick patients and because of the nature of the intervention, because the most critical part of the vital signs respiratory rate is definitely somehow impacted when you put in a scope. So our conclusion is that ravumazolam appears to be safe, a safe alternative to midazolam in both patients with and without significant comorbidities. We recommend careful use of fentanyl because we have seen that with a reduction of the fentanyl dose, patients do as well as they do with higher doses. And we will eventually also recommend to reduce doses of reduced ranibizumab and fentanyl in patients with significant comorbidities as compared to those patients that are in better health. And this is pretty much also reflected in the midazolam label, which is therefore nothing unusual. Next. And I want to close this section of the presentation with a quote from our PI, who has done a great job in supporting us, helping to design the study design and motivating the people and his colleagues to recruit the patients. And what he says is that the results suggest that, you know, first of all, it's the first drug in many years to be tested for use in providing procedural sedation. The first propofol trial is more than 10 years away, and that he definitely sees that Remy has the potential to broaden options for bronchoscopy, and remimazolam may be an ideal agent for patients who require bronchoscopy because it is safe, ultra-short acting, and has excellent sedative effects and allows patients to more quickly wake to an alert state. Of course, we, together with our investigators, are looking further into the data. What we have seen now is only the peak of the iceberg, and these data will be presented in an adequate environment. But he is sure already, based on the data that we have now, that definitely ranibizumab will have a place in providing adequate sedation for his patients. Next. So, just a step back from the data to where we are, both commercially and in progress. So, as you all know, we did a deal with Cosmo in 2016, almost 1 year ago. So within 12 months, we have completed 3 phase 3 trials with more or less the same results. We received $10 million last year in upfront payment and 9.6 in equity and another $0.4 million in the course of the capital increase in February 2017. The royalties are ranging between 20 and 25%, which I think is a very good royalty rate, and this is the feedback I get from a lot of people who look at this deal. It is also kept at 15% of net sales because of the uncertainty of how pricing will be at the launch. Cosmo and Pion have essentially divided the work packages. Pion is responsible to deliver the data for the submission, and Cosmo is essentially responsible for filing and all things that have happened afterwards. Next. As I mentioned before, the U.S. market has a great opportunity and therefore targeted audience that allows to cover this with a limited sales force of around 20 million procedures in colonoscopy and upper GI. And as you see on the right side, there is another potential of 23 million in other procedures. And this is a whole array of procedures ranging from bronchoscopy, which probably has one of the higher numbers, 400,000 to 600,000 being performed as to our information, but also dental extraction, emergency interventions, etc. Next slide. So the current market is divided into those who are using midazolam and those who are using propofol. Our primary goal is to substitute midazolam because the downside of midazolam is that it is less efficient and therefore you can do less screening. And everyone who wants to prevent colon cancer knows that increasing the number of screening is very important. Of course, that where propofol is being used, we will also have a relevant alternative for these physicians who are using propofol. And this will be mainly dependent on how the healthcare system is moving. If it is moving into a bundle, which everybody expects, then our chances to get more of the full market are quite high. Next. In the EU, we have a different lead indication, which is mainly due to the very different setup in the healthcare systems. Most of the procedures in Europe are done in hospitals, and it's a complete efficiency is not as an important point as it is in the US, and colon screening rates are significantly lower in Europe. However, in general anesthesia, there's a growing awareness that hypotension, need for vasopressors, and too deep sedation are three elements that contribute to bad outcomes after surgery or where anesthesia is required. And here we have a very attractive alternative with remimazolam, and this has been shown already in two different trials. What you see here is the result of the phase 3 trial performed in Japanese patients. Next. Unfortunately, we had to stop a study last year in patients undergoing major cardiac surgery. This was due to the complex study design, which led to very slow recruitment. This was even significantly slower than the recruitment in a bronchoscopy study when we started, and in order to preserve the cash to be able to complete the US program, we decided to stop the study. We, of course, want to develop the drug essentially in all three indications. And general anesthesia is the most advanced one because of the available data in Japan. The plan now is to restart the program in Europe by doing a study that is pretty much the same study as was performed in Japan in general surgery. Because there, the study protocol with propofol only will be better accepted. We have discussed this with leading European anesthesiologists, and our study design has already been decided on. We are currently doing some preparatory work, and that includes a phase 1 study that we need in order to support the sample size calculation for this study, because it will be important to show that these hypotensive effects happen at the same sedation level as compared to propofol. And for that, we need some data to prove that and to have an exact feeling for how many patients we need in order to show that we are at least as good as propofol in this domain. And of course, once we have those data, we will have a discussion with the EMA, ask for scientific advice, and then we go forward. We assume, based on current planning and assumption, that the funding that we need is around 20 to 25 million until filing. And this variant is mainly driven by the, at this stage, not finally known sample size for that trial. Next. In Japan, Ono had completed a program that was discussed with the Japanese FDA, PMDA. We received a license plate from Ono in 2015. In earlier this year, we have raised 5 million euros in order to start prepare the filing of remimazolam in Japan. And this is a very important step because it shows to those who are looking at remimazolam with some skepticism due to the fact that it was handed back by Ono, now see that PAION strongly believes in the potential of it and the success and the successful filing. And our plan is to partner this either during the dossier preparation or before the filing. It is not the plan to market this ourselves in Japan. Next. Well, this is the end of the presentation, and I would like to hand back to Ralf.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang, for the presentation of the great phase 3 data. I would like now to start the Q&A session, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Dennis Holm from Edison. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Wolfgang. Thanks for taking my call. Congratulations on the results. They look very impressive. I guess my main question is just about the hypoxia number. Your hypertension data certainly looks superior to midazolam. Hypoxia numbers are slightly worse than midazolam. So is that a surprising finding, and is it a significant difference between the two?
No. First of all, it is not a significant difference, we assume, but we have not have the test yet at hand. It was also not the primary test for now, and we don't see that this is a significant difference. And I would like to refer to the statement of Gerard Silvestri, our principal investigator, with whom we have discussed the data yesterday before we published them. And his statement is quite clear that remimazolam is a safe alternative to midazolam.
Okay, thank you. And just in relation to your development program, you've mentioned previously that before filing that you'll need additional phase 1 studies to assess abuse potential. Can you just give us an update as to where those phase 1 studies are at?
Yes, we are in the middle of that program, and we have made good progress there. We will have the data, we assume, available by the end of the year in time to meet our timeline for filing in the middle of 2018.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all my questions. Everything else is quite straightforward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Igor Kim from Otto Seidler. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. I've got one question regarding Europe. If you start the next trial in general anesthesia, do you think there is a risk that the EMA will require a kind of additional trial in a more risky patient, like it was in the U.S., for example, cardiac surgery, so that you could again end up with within the patient group, or it's not really relevant for you?
No, I mean the EMA would be fine with a study in general surgery. When we based on our phase 2 data, it was our decision to go for cardiac surgery patients because the feedback from clinician was that if you have a successful study on cardiac surgery, it will be used in all patients because this would, you know, kind of create a kind of insurance policy on the safety side. The EMA did not request the study to be in cardiac surgery. It was a PION decision. And EMA already indicated in the past that they would be open to do to accept a study in general surgery.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Simon Scholes from First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I remember last year when we were talking about colonoscopy. I discussed with Ralph that there was a deviation between label usage of midazolam and the dosage used in practice. Mm-hmm. Is there any deviation at all between label usage in bronchoscopy and what physicians actually use in practice?
Yes, it is. It is comparable that in bronchoscopy also. Higher doses of midazolam are used. It is mainly in order to overcome the lag time to start the procedure. So there was a recent, at the European Anesthesia Congress, was a recent review of all data on procedural sedation, and it was pointed out by the guy who presented that the time to onset for midazolam to start a procedure on average is 13 minutes plus minus across procedures, and this is also what we have seen here. Yeah, if you and this is not only at the labeled dose, this is on average. And it is the downside of giving a higher dose in the beginning that would lead to a shorter start would then lead to a longer sleep, which is pretty much, I think, reflected in the very long wake up time in the bronchoscopy study. These patients seem to be very tired after the procedure, and this is also some anecdotal feedback that we have received from patients who believed that they had received remimazolam and their relatives were absolutely excited about the difference in how quickly their relatives came back to be normal.
Right. Okay, so in real life, I mean, real life, you'd be with midazolam, you're seeing shorter onset but longer offset.
That was the conclusion when the data were presented at the ACG in October. Was exactly the same question from the panel, and everyone was in agreement that the real-life situation was not represented fully in this trial because of the lower-than-normal dose, and that the sleepy time would be much longer on average if you look at what's happening every day in practice.
Okay, thanks. And then I was just wondering if you could make some general comments as the importance of the issues of hypoxia and hypotension in bronchoscopy.
Well, hypotension is not so much worrying, because this is more or less because, you know, assume you would know that you get a stick in your throat. I guess you would be a little bit excited, okay? So that brings up your blood pressure. Then you get a sedative, which by the nature of disease releases anxiety. Then your blood pressure lowers because of the drop in 20 millimeters. This is classified as hypotension. Then in the middle of the procedure, when maybe you have a little bit of a lighter state of sedation, the procedure hurts you. So you get excited again, so you get hypertension. You get another top-up dose, and then you get hypotension. So this is not worrying. The other point is that hypoxia is more frequent in bronchoscopy patients, is in the nature of the disease. What we have looked at is, however, that this hypoxia and these low oxygen values are not related to the level of sedation. They are more probably related to what is being done with the patient. Because, you know, they're sucking out things and they're moving the scope. So patients who already have low oxygen because of their underlying disease, of course, have a higher risk to cross threshold. The threshold was 90% oxygen saturation. If you fly with an airplane, you will have most of the time 85%. So you would be continuously hypoxic under this definition. It was a very strict rule, which is justified in a drug that has not been approved. And therefore you get these higher rates, but they're nothing to worry about. And again, I would like to refer to the statement of Silvestri, who clearly says that that he regards remimazolam as a very safe agent.
Okay. And then you also mentioned the number of bronchoscopy procedures per year compared to the number of colonoscopy procedures per year, but I didn't quite catch that number.
Right now it's around 500,000 to 600,000 in the US alone. And there seems to be an increase in those procedures, and this is very interesting for remimazolam, because what some physicians have started to do is in patients that have chronic have COPD, they give them initially a lavage every week for 4 weeks. And then they do it maybe every 3 weeks or every 4 weeks, but these patients recover very much and they require less medication and less oxygen to support them. So it is really a cleaning activity of the lung, and this could increase the number of bronchoscopy to a certain degree, and we this could be, you know, a way to use Remimazole, because if patients require repeated interventions, it will be even more important for them to wake up quickly.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Just a reminder, please press star 1 on your keypad to ask a question. Again, just a final reminder, please press star 1 on your keypad to ask a question. Okay, there are no further questions from the English-speaking participants, so I will hand you back to Ralph Penner. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for all your questions. Wie angekündigt, würden wir dann gerne jetzt die Fragen in Deutsch entgegennehmen und auch in Deutsch beantworten. Bitte schön, die Einführung werden Sie von der Frau Quilitz bekommen.
Vielen Dank. Sie haben jetzt die Möglichkeit, Ihre Fragen zu stellen. Bitte drücken Sie hierzu die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihrer Telefontastatur. Möchten Sie Ihre Frage wieder zurückziehen, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 2. Zur Erinnerung, falls Sie eine Frage stellen möchten, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihrer Telefontastatur. Wir haben keine weiteren Fragen und somit übergebe ich das Wort zurück an Ralph Penner für abschließende Worte. Dankeschön.
Ja, vielen herzlichen Dank. Sollten natürlich noch Fragen auftreten, können Sie mich auch jederzeit gerne nach dem Call noch anrufen und ich werde dann versuchen, Ihre Fragen zu beantworten. Now, my closing remarks again. Thank you very much for joining us for PIONS Earnings Call on the US Phase 3 Bronchoscopy Headline Data. I hope, of course, we have been able to answer your questions, but please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit our website where the audio recording will be posted later today. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in PIONS.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace your handsets.